We're talking with Zimbabwe and Kenya today on the Jazz of Enchantment series.
You know what I wanted to do real quick, too, is I'm not sure if we really touched on this, but talk about some of your influences. And you mentioned something about Heath Brothers and Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Heath Brothers again real quick. And you mentioned Smiling Billy.
Yeah.
We're going to hear a little bit of that.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay. And so can you tell us a little bit about why that song is important to you?
I think it was the time frame, the time period when it came out, what was happening in my life at that time, and the way Percy Heath was playing with the bow in the intro, and then just the way he lays down that bass line when Stanley Cowell comes in with that Imbira, man, it's killer, you know. But it's more than that. It's not, I mean, when you listen to it, you can say it's jazz, but not really, because a lot of, you know, jazz, when you say jazz, yeah, you know, jazz is always developing. It's constantly, even though there's a trend today to kind of take it back, but, you know, it's always pushing forward, and it's always growing, and it's always evolving, you know. But at that time period, when the Heath Brothers put out that was their first album, that label, it was like the label, Strata East, you know, it was a black label. All that music on that label was excellent. Strata East, that label, you know, because sometimes you go over to a cat's house and we had those turntables that the record would drop down.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have a stack of five albums. And it would either be Impulse, you know, it'd either be a stack of Impulse on there or it'd be a stack of Strata East. I remember that, man. It was like... that was the only two labels we Columbia and other stuff, but the main, you know, meat of the music we were listening to was Impulse and Strata East.
Cool.
Strata East being the young, you know, renegade, and it was, you know, I think Charles Tolliver was running that company. I'm not sure, but that Heath Brothers album, when it came out, it was just that period of time, just that, you know, we had dreams and visions, you know, like. A lot of information was coming in about Africa and, you know, being black. It was great being black at that time. And then that record was just...
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some of it real quick.
So it still sounds good.
Oh, man, it does. So you brought something in by Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, Polygap.
Yes.
From a Rainbow Bridge. Yeah, see, that cut is so cold-blooded because it's instrumental. There's no vocals on it, you know. And I remember the first time I heard it, you know, I mean, you know, we're we're waiting for the vocal, you know, the lyrics and stuff to come in. Then when the song ended, I was like, man, you know, it was like a jazz cut or something. You know, it's like, cause I dig that, that it's not bootleg, but that Woodstock when he had Sky Church, you know, mm-hmm. they were doing like a lot of, it was instrumental, you know, it right. sounded like, not jazzy, but it was just a powerful improvisational thing, you know, without the singing.
Yeah.
The singing is cool though. Jimmy can sing, you know, but Polygot was just so, I mean, we put it on first couple of cuts, you know, singing, you know, Dolly Dagger and that, mm-hmm. you know, then Polygot comes in and it's like, he's not singing yet. He's not singing yet. And then, you know, by the end of the song, you're just laid out on the floor. You know, it's like, it's a powerful cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, Jimmy, if you know Jimmy.
There's not many not powerful cuts that Jimmy did.
That's true. But that one is, yeah. Of course, you know, Electric Ladyland, I like that. Yeah, man, but Polygap is, it was, you know, right here. So, you know, like I was talking about the projects and stuff, a lot of times, when you start getting into music, it takes your time away from the negative things. If you know, because you have to, you know, when you hear Hendrix, you know, I mean, you have to really be into your axe or your instrument to get to that point. And the only way to really get to that point is you have to be with it. And you know, you can't be,
there's no separation between you and the instrument. That's what my feeling is.
That's right. You know, and it's a constant thing and it's a labor of love, you know. And I've seen it, certain music, man, like if a cat wants to get into that music and he starts, you know, studying and learning and he starts, the next thing you know, he's developed into, you know, a human being. Seriously, just by, you know, trying to do some music, trying to do a Hendrix tune, it might take you, you know, through that whole period of negativity. And then you look around and you say, hey, you know, I don't need to, you know, be down in that.
Got this Imbira right here, which I heard a few minutes ago, and has this beautiful sound to it. Would you play some?
I'd love to. Thank you.
You know what? Here we are. We're in New Mexico, and you've been here for years.
Yes, I have.
And I was going to say, you're probably one of the first black people that came here.
Yeah. It was when I was stationed here, and I was stationed at Kirtland. You know, I was in the Air Force here, and it's totally different now. But yeah, it's been quite an experience. But not really, because I don't know. Albuquerque seems, New Mexico, it seems like it's really like kind of segregated, because there's a lot of black people here. And like say, for example, like if there's like Whitney Houston comes to town, you've never seen so many black people. I mean, you know, as far as the eye can see, and just other venues around and the way the neighborhoods are set up, people are really spread out, and I don't know how to describe it, but it seems like there's some kind of segregation thing happening out here. And not only that, but when you add in the factor of the Native American factor, I don't see people coming together like they should be in New Mexico. Maybe I can change that.
Hmm.
But there seems to be a lot of separation, man. Sometimes, you know, like I guess I travel in different circles around, you know, because I'm, you know, I get along with everybody, you know, but a lot of times, man, I'm with my brethren, and you know, it's like that's the scene is kind of segregated.
Well, is there, how is that with the audiences that come to see you? I mean, what are your audiences like, the folks that come to watch your performance?
The audiences are mixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're, black people, Europeans, Native Americans, Asians. Yes. The audiences are mixed, you know, but a lot of times it seems, overall, there's more Europeans that come to check out the music.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is?
I don't have a clue.
You know, I
pondered it before.
I pondered it too, you know, because like, you know, I'll go out to a jazz concert and I have the same observation you do. You go to a blues concert. My mother came to town,
mm-hmm.
and I took her to a blues concert, and it was like the Whitney Houston thing, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a preference or a thing. But I mean, it sounds like what part of your thing is to try to start bringing people and bringing them together.
Yes, it's important, yeah, because it's our music, you know. I mean, jazz is black music, no matter what they try to tell you,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, yeah, now that, you know, people all over the world like it, but I remember, you know, during World War II, you know, jazz was coming in, you know. So Lena Horne, she goes over to support the troops, right? The USO, and they've got the Nazi war criminals, because they're white, sitting in front of black GIs because they're black. You hear what I said? Did you hear what I said? Say it again.
Oh, yes.
Lena Horne goes over to support the troops. They put the Nazi war criminals in front of the black GIs that are fighting for this country because they're black. And the Nazis were white. The guy that found out how to separate blood plasma so you could save blood to save lives, he got into a car accident and bled to death.
Yes.
Because they wouldn't treat him because he was black. They wouldn't give him no blood.
Yeah, I remember this story. I remember this story.
These are the kind of things that my music, you know, is inspired by, those kind of stories. You know, I mean, I've got compositions and tunes that are based on the writings of Richard Wright. I've got some compositions that are based on what happened with the Native American nations in the United States that's still going on today. I've got some compositions that talk about the genocide that's going on right now in certain countries of people of African descent. And all these things, I mean, it's not like, you know, you don't want to get into a negative, you know, but all these things are important to bring out into the open, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important. And not only is it important, but it can be changed. I mean, it's important to get it out. It's important to get it out, but it's more important to try, at least try to change, you know, do a change. Music is a very powerful force. And if I could use my music to change for the good and for justice, then that's what I'm all about. You know, yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Translate, yeah, okay.
Madagascar?
No, he... What you just talked about was how the music, how you're inspired to create music, and how issues in the world inform what you write.
Yeah. It's like on that Heath Brothers album. There's a song called Watergate Blues. At that time, Watergate, you know, that political scandal, you know, mm-hmm. those backroom deals and how that affects people in a negative way. Also, you know, Jimmy was very vocal on the Vietnam War, you know, with the machine gun and a lot mm-hmm. of tunes. You know, I mean, it was, you have to speak out sometime. You know?
So how do you end up translating that? How do you end up translating if you're not using words? How do you end up translating, I guess?
Oh, lyrics.
Lyrics, like the feelings that you have into a note, a song. That sort of thing. How does that happen for you?
Yeah, people have been struggling with that for a long time. You know, even in classical music, like they, you know, it's, you have to just do it. I mean, I guess you can't, you can think about it, you know, and make an effort, but it's all in the doing, you know, it's in the doing of it. And then, you have to be true to yourself and tell people, you know, what you're doing.
Is it?
You have to communicate. Yeah, it's like a communication, but sometimes it gets across, you know, but usually you have to
speak. Help them a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, help them a bit. Speak out, you know, tell people. Don't just be, don't just do it and then say it like you're trying to, you know, I mean, yeah, you gotta speak it. There's no real translation for it. You know, like I was getting ready to get into that classical music where they have, you know, like the swan or the whatever. I mean, if you listen to it, I'm not getting the image of the swan and all that, you know?
That's right.
So it's the same thing with me, you know, if I say it, then I mean it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. That's the only way you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to just say it and mean it. And that's all you can do.
So
I'm not going to start singing, you know.
Why not?
My voice is awful. It's awful. I like, you know, people are like, oh my God, that's it. Yeah, it's awful.